scripture tonight is John 18:28 to 19:16. Then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. It was early morning. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. So Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." The Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death." This was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what kind of death he was going to die. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world." Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king." Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" After he had said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, "I find no guilt in him, but you have a custom that I should release one man for you at the Passover. So do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" They cried out again, "No, not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber. Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him, and the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. They came up to him saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and struck him with their hands. Pilate went out again and said to them, "See, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." When the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to that law he ought to die because he has made himself the Son of God." When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said to him, "You will not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered him, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given to you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin." From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar." So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the Stone Pavement, and in Aramaic, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. He said to the Jews, "Behold your king." They cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priest answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So he delivered him over them to be crucified. So they took Jesus. This is the word of the Lord.
Great man. He was not even a good man. He was known more for his greed and his cruelty than his leadership skills. But he was an effective administrator, and that was what Rome needed to manage the difficult province of Palestine, that coveted land bridge between Egypt and Syria. Pontius Pilate had been governing Palestine now for 5 years. He would last five more. When a knock came at his door early one spring morning, he groaned, rose from his bed, put on a robe, made his way to greet the messenger. When he saw the messenger at his door, the messenger pointed to the religious leaders on the other side of the courtyard and His heart sank. Not again, he thought. Pilate was a man filled with many hates, but his hatred of the Jews knew no bounds, and they hated him. He had gotten off to a terrible start with these strange, brave, ferocious people who claimed to worship the one God of Israel. He had marched into Jerusalem with banners and a bust of the emperor, who the Romans believed was a god. The Jews had demanded that he remove it. Pilate refused. He forced them all into an amphitheater. And he said, look, I am the governor. If you don't worship this bust, I will slit your throat right now. All the Jews bared their necks and dared the soldiers to pick up their swords. The soldiers backed off and Pilate backed down. Things went from bad to worse. Pilate was living in the great palace of Herod. He insisted on putting another image of the Roman god emperor on display in his palace. The Jews revolted. He killed many of them. A report was sent back to the emperor Tiberius. Tiberius made Pilate back down again. He was a power-hungry man in the most powerful empire on the earth. He wanted to keep his seat. He knew that if he got in trouble with the Jews one more time, he'd be replaced. And so now he groaned as he looked at the crowd at his doorstep. Pilate comes to the balcony in order to address the crowd below. It was Passover. The courtyard was filled with thousands of pilgrims and spilled over into the streets. He did not invite the Jewish leaders into his palace. He knew they thought him vile and unclean. And the leaders thrust a man in front of the crowd, pushed him underneath the balcony. Pilate looked down. He was a practical man. He had little knowledge of Jewish law. All he wanted to know was what crime had been committed. The sooner he could end this little fiasco and get back to breakfast, the better. So he asked them, what is the charge that you're bringing? And they say, if he weren't doing evil, we wouldn't have brought them to you. Pilate says, take care of it yourselves. And he says, it's not lawful, they reply. Pilate knows this. He knows that they can't exercise Roman law, but he just wants to get this out of the way. And so reluctantly, he grabs the prisoner, takes them back inside to the palace. Herod's massive palace, the governor's residence, is about a 10-minute walk from the temple, about 10 minutes away from where Jesus will be crucified outside the walls. It looms over Jerusalem's western wall. It is 10 football fields long, 2 fields wide, features banquet halls, baths, ponds with bronze fountains, and houses hundreds of house guests. Soldiers lead the condemned man to the room in the palace where the magistrate normally conducts his messy legal business. Pilate has absolute power. He doesn't need to worry about a trial by jury. He doesn't need about getting the man an attorney. He's not a Roman citizen. Pilate's word is law. Are you king of the Jews? Pilate knows that if the man is claimed to be the Jewish king, this is a problem. The king of the Jews was, of course, the emperor, the only true king. Revolution was in the air in Palestine. If this man claimed to be king, he was a terrorist and needed to be dealt with. Then Jesus does something that has never before happened to the Roman ruler. He asks him a question. So, did you say this of your own accord, or did other people tell that to you? Pilate looks up from the fingernail he's been filing. He blinks. He looks more closely at the man. This has never happened. He has seen prisoners defecate in his presence. He has seen prisoners wet their pants before he finished the first question. He's seen strong men fall to their knees and weep for mercy, but no prisoner has ever asked him a question in an interrogation. Pilate, not a man given to many prayers. Prayers one. My God, who does this man think he is? Pilate is now awake. He is irritated, but he also feels more life in his chest than he has known in many years. Something has awakened within him. Is it fear? Is it hope? Am I a Jew? He thunders. It's your nation that delivered you to me. What have you done? The stranger stares at him with steely, gray eyes and says calmly, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would have been fighting. My kingdom isn't of the Jews." Pilate is sweating now, even though it's not 9 in the morning. He still has not had breakfast. His stomach is growling. A pile of paperwork and a half-written speech lies on his desk. The day's patronage appointments are already starting to line the lobby outside of his office. He had planned to dispatch this Jew before him, whoever he was, with just a couple of verbal thrusts, but the interrogation is going terribly wrong. In fact, Pilate feels interrogated himself. See, he knows all about the kingdom of this world. He'd fought for that kingdom, bled for that kingdom, killed for that kingdom. He knows what the kingdom of this world can offer: status, big houses, sex, names on tombs. But he also knew what this kingdom could never offer: peace, meaning, hope, love, joy. And the prisoner keeps staring into him with those steel gray eyes. Pilate cannot bear the look. He turns away, looks back, turns away, looks back, and thinks, could there be another kingdom? Could there be something more? Could there be another way of life? He's not a devout man, but he still believes in the Roman gods. He's heard tales of gods coming to earth as messengers. Could one be standing before him right now? Could he be before God? To his horror, Pilate fights back an inner compulsion to bow before the feet of the prisoner, weeping, confessing, unburdening a soul blackened by a thousand sins. Then the urge slips away. Pilate regains his composure. "So, you're a king, you say that," the prisoner answers and then explains. "It's for this purpose that I was born, that I've come to the world to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate is undone. He has never been a part of an interrogation like this. "Pilate," the prisoner seems to say, "are you listening to me? This is the single most important moment of your life." Truth stands before him. How will he respond? There is silence. A pigeon scratches at the floor between the two kings. Pilate has forgotten about his breakfast. He's forgotten about the mob. He's forgotten about Caesar. This conversation infuriates him. It terrifies him. It draws him. What is truth? Pilate feels as if a door has swung open and the stranger has invited him to walk through it. The stranger waits. Pilate looks longingly at a door into a kingdom he's known only in his dreams. He takes a step. A question rises up within him. A conversation that he could have. A long conversation in the language of another kingdom. The tomb of his heart begins to fill with light. A crack at first, then a beam, and then the mob roars. Another chant begins. They are angry and restless. If he blows this one and the emperor gets another complaint, he's out of a job and there are the papers on his desk and the half-written speech and breakfast. So Pilate looks away from the stranger, shoves him back out onto the balcony. Perhaps he can get away with a compromise. "Look, I find no guilt in him," he says. "Shall I release him?" "No," the crowd bellows. "Release Barabbas." He is in turmoil now. In a perfect world, he would stop time, spend the day with the stranger, talk to him about the truth, explore the kingdom on the other side of the door. But Pilate does not live in a perfect world. So he orders his soldiers to flog the stranger. They do. And more. Covering the man who just judged the judge with a purple robe and crown of thorns and taunting him, "Hail, King of the Jews." Pilate, meanwhile, returns to his office to catch up on paperwork. A servant has placed a plate of bread and cheese and dates before him along with a glass of wine. He feels more comfortable in his office. He's returned now to the grim, familiar business of empire running. He pins an order for the building of a new aqueduct. He looks at notes about a grain harvest. Swilling his wine, he hears the sounds of flesh tearing as the soldiers rip skin off the stranger's back. He pushes away from the desk and asks himself, "Am I making a mistake? There was something about that man. What did he mean when he said, 'Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice'?" As he asks himself that question, his wife comes into the room. She says, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man. I have suffered much because of him today in a dream." And then she leaves. He sits. He thinks. He waits. A scream shatters the silence, then laughter, then another agonizing cry. Pilate pops a date into his mouth, finishes off his wine. The wine feels warm and soothing as it goes down. He feels more at peace now, more in control. Why rock the boat? A few minutes and this will be over. So he wipes his face, reads one more letter, heads back outside to face the crowd, says again, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you. I don't find any guilt in him." The shoulders shove him back onto the balcony. "Ecce homo," Pilate says. "Behold the man." He'd meant the words as mockery, as if to say to his enemies, "Is this the kind of man you regard as a rival king?" But even as he says the words, he winces, wondering if he is saying more than he meant to say. He finds the stranger's eyes, fastens upon them, then looks away. The crowd cries, "Crucify him!" Confused, conflicted, Pilate retorts, "Take him yourself and crucify him. He knows better. Only a Roman emperor or a Roman leader can crucify someone." Yet those words keep swirling in his head. "A kingdom not of this world. I have come into the world to bear witness to the truth." And then he hears the real reason for the ruler's demands. "He has made himself out to be the Son of God." And when he hears the word "Son of God," a wave of terror washes over him. His knees weaken. He begins to sweat. His chest tightens. Again, a man who rarely prays a prayer, "Dear God, what is happening?" He grabs the stranger, pushes him back inside where it's quiet, and slams the door again. The muffled cries of crucify him can still be heard. Pilate collapses on a chair. The stranger stands in front of him. They both hear the sound of blood dripping on Italian marble. "Where are you from?" Pilate finally asks. The stranger looks at him, says nothing. Exasperated, Pilate rises to his feet, pounds the table, and says, "Do you have any idea who you were talking to? Do you know I have the authority right now to execute you or crucify you?" The stranger looks at them with the eyes. "You would have no authority over me at all, unless it had been given to you by above. The one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." Pilate is done. He falls back into his chair, his head in his hands. The mob continues to chant. The stranger's blood continues to drop on the Italian marble. He has killed men for less insubordination than this. But this man, this king from another world, speaks with such authority as if truth himself were speaking. If he cannot embrace him, at the very least he can release him. So he heads back out to the balcony one more time, attempts to stumble through a speech about releasing the stranger. The crowd interrupts him. "Hey, if you release this man, you're no friend of Caesar's." He knows exactly what card they played. He knows that if he fails to release this man, the word will go to Rome and he will lose his job. Weary and numb, he summons his soldiers. He heads out onto the square before the palace. He sits down in the seat of judgment. The soldiers shove the stranger before him. The sun is hot now. "Behold your king," he says, half. Heartedly, but the joke is not as funny as it once was. "Crucify him," they cry. Pilate winces, asks again, "Shall I crucify your king?" He is trapped in a game he can't figure out how to end. The chief priest says something no Jew ever dreamed of hearing from the spiritual leader of Israel: "We have no king but Caesar." Then Pilate delivers the stranger to be crucified. Pilate spends the next 5 years fighting for political survival. He loses his job. He's called back to Rome. He's sent into exile. History is divided on what happens next. Several early church leaders, like Eusebius, tell us that Pilate, overcome with remorse, killed himself with a knife. Other early church leaders, like St. Augustine, tell us that Pilate converted and became a missionary. The Egyptian Orthodox Church eventually made Pilate a saint. And you can find early Christian art with pictures of Abraham, Daniel, and Saint Pilate. Let's pray.